say that Eva is a media researcher.
Olga.
Eva. Olga. Olga is a media researcher and a writer. And so, welcome.
Thank you. I'll talk on, I'll present the runme.org software art repository. And actually I was planning to talk first a little bit about software art and some problems and things that there are with this field. But also before I start, I thought that maybe not a lot of people actually know what is meant by software art. So maybe I start with showing a few little pieces so that you get some idea, and then I can proceed to the talk. So I will show a few of my favorite pieces that are very small and they don't really represent the whole body of work that is done, which is a lot of work. But so don't perceive it as the software art, but just something. First, I want to show the little program that is called Putin.exe, and it's just a program that executes the portrait of the president, and you can have it on your desktop. Also on top of every program, it goes on top of every window. So you can decorate your desktop, your working environment with the portrait of the president. As you know, people decorate their cabinets and offices with the portrait. So it's a very little piece, and you can it's very easy to write it, and it's, I think it's very nice critical ironic comment on software culture and on politics and a kind of oh, the programmer can, but you can't. So there is another project that goes nicely in line with this one, which is called Threat Monitor. And when you launch it, it creates this little icon in the bottom of your screen. And what is what it shows? It shows it connects to the site of the Department for Homeland Security, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and downloads the current the current color that shows the level of threat, terrorist attack. So you can also, it's already handy, you have it on your desktop each day. You enter your computer, you have the, you know, the level of threat. And you can change the style of it. And if you want to change the level, for instance, it will tell you that only the President of the United States may change the current Homeland Security threat level. So I think it's, yeah, it's also a very nice comment on politics of today. And but it's not only about political issues or social issues, but also about aesthetics of software and what also about the ways that software makes us think. And there was what is important, that software art is not only for people who can program and who understand programming very deeply, but you can also make a piece of software art just playing around with software and not actually doing any programming. So there is one piece made by two Russian guys, which is called the screensaver. And it is the set of instructions to make an alternative screensaver in the Windows environment. So that's the Russian Windows, but I just go to screensavers, and there is this screensaver that, of course, you know, this rotating time. So you just take these screensavers, screensaver go to the, part where you adjust it, and you change the some parameters.
The speed.
Sorry.
The speed.
Yeah, you change. Yeah, you can find instructions also on the net. I just there is a set of instructions. You change the speed, the color, the style of movement, and then what's the most important? You change the text from the time you change to the text, and what you type into the text field is just one dot, and then you get the beautiful minimalistic avant-garde piece of art on your desktop as a screensaver, which is very nice because eventually, of course, I mean, obviously it wasn't planned by Windows programmers that you have this kind of screensaver. And this is a very nice discovery, I think. So, I don't know, shall I show something else? Or also, one of the projects that got one of the prizes on the README Software Art Festival was this project by one American guy, which is called Extension, and it's basically the word processing program. So it's basically like Word. You type in words, and it interprets them in a special way. And then you can move to a different mode. Little game here. Yeah, you can explore it on your own. There is this last mode, it's very philosophical, I think. You start typing and then you continue typing and you never see the end of where it goes. So, yeah, I think I shall move to the content of the lecture, presentation. Like software art, as this term appeared on stage basically in the end of 90s, and it was associated with some projects that were also part of net art, such as Webstalker by the group IUD, and they chose this motto on the website to represent them, which was saying, "Software is mind control, get some." So that was the basic principle of interest towards software, that people would get interested in how software controls the way we work and the way we think in the digital space. And then the interest went to broader perspective, and also it got referred to many practices that were already there. So, I wanted to present software art as a kind of field that comprises two major trends, one of which would be art of code, and another I would call critique of software. And art of code, it's basically a programming practice, or at least there are people who know programming, who engage in code poetry. And one of the guys, one of the people who, Jeff Cox, whom we had yesterday, talked a lot about that. And I can't really present it really well, because I don't know programming myself very well, so I can't interpret the poetry. But you see it around me, there is a big category for code art. And code art tradition goes back to the first MIT hackers, to the first hackers who present themselves as a kind of poets. And there is this article, Unix is Literature, which talks about that behind any programming language, there is a language, actually. And language is one of the most creative and complex domains of human, that human has an access to. So why can't it be a poet of a programming language if there are poets of human languages? So basically, it's a tradition coming from looking at code as a kind of a literature that you can, the body of some textual practice that you can use and create things within. And another part of this interest is also the admiration for nice algorithm or kind of good way to decide some task, programming task, which is in the end takes form of an sometimes a very elegant algorithm. And there is also a category, and there is also a trend that could be called algorithmic appreciation. And there are people also referring to programming as art practice, because they say that to find a real beautiful algorithm, it's a real art practice. And I think that I was thinking why actually it's so popular, this belief, because I mean you can also say that a doctor, a surgeon who makes a good operation, he's an artist as well, who does it very, very well. So it's more like a very kind of common sense idea of art and practice. But then I was thinking that probably this appreciation of some mathematical decision, this idea also goes back to the very first philosophers of rationalism and also to antiquity, when people who did the mathematics believed that there is a mathematical formula behind any life formula. So if you conceive the concise, the mathematics behind the world, then you would have the complete knowledge of the world. So it's more like this magic belief in that the formula has the power. And so what I wanted to emphasize that in the practice of software art, there is a very huge kind of population of programmers who do something that they wouldn't really call art, or sometimes they would, but it wouldn't go into art festivals or to the art context. And it's, of course, it's very natural because they work with software, and the nature of digital economy is also made the way that people have to spend a lot of time working on software and fixing things and administrating networks. So I was checking one site, and there was a link to, you know, kind of site where you can meet people and find a partner or something like that. And it was displaying some announcement by a woman who was saying, I would like to meet a man, la la la, this and this. Please, programmers, don't bother. So I think it gives the idea of how busy programmers usually are, and how kind of how they are, that they're not very suitable for relationship, human relationship. So that's what I wanted to say, that it's really natural that they spend a lot of time with software, and they create the whole culture of different jokes and gimmicks about coding or about maintaining things. And some of these gimmicks and jokes can be excellent projects, you know, that if they are exhibited in an art space, they would, I mean, they're high quality. Of course, some of them are not so high because it's a folk culture, so it's different. But some of them are really amazingly good, and that's one of the issues in software art, how you bring these cultures, you know, to the art context, or whether you need to bring them, or actually how to deal with it at all. And another kind of major trend would be, in my opinion, this kind of critical approach to software, and this thinking, it's in a way based, I think, well, I'm not an advocate of this idea that theory kind of influences life or art. I think practice comes first and then there is a theory. But I think there is this whole change in the paradigm of thinking from very deterministic, which was on the stage for the whole 20th century, and it goes back to Spengler and Heidegger and this Marcuse, or I don't know, many philosophers who were analyzing how software technology changes what it is to be a human, and then they would say that this change is not challengeable, that you can't actually resist it or you can't change it, but all you can do basically is to refuse from using technology, which is of course not possible. And this view also suggests that technology is kind of autonomous force, almost alien, that just comes and determines your life, and it's not possible to change it. And in the last maybe 10 years, 15 years, they appeared a very new approach to technology, which, as some researchers say, it first appeared in ecological movement, when people decided that there is no need in asking people to stop consuming, you know, to save the planet, but it's more usable if you to try to put certain laws and to put certain boundaries to the companies, or so to actually to try to change the process of production rather than to just to call to people, you know, and say become good, something like that. And some researchers say that it's a very big change in mind, so that people don't feel powerless anymore, but they would feel that they can change the technology, and so they will change the outcomes of the technology. And there is this discipline, the whole discipline of sociology of technology, which studies which factors influence the technology when it is being created. And so if you change the factors that influence the technology in the beginning, then it will be working differently. And one, I remember one article I was really surprised by. There was a research on refrigerators, and I think it was Schwarzkoven was the surname of the researcher, and she was researching, because in the beginning there were electric refrigerators and gas refrigerators, and she was interested why electric refrigerator won over the gas one, and we all have electric refrigerators. And she found out that technically, you would assume that, of course, there is an idea of progress and efficiency, so that you would assume that the most efficient one, but she shows that it's not the case. And the gas refrigerator was quite good, and there was no difference between the electric one and the gas one. But the guy who was developing the gas refrigerator wasn't so smart in management, and the guy who developed the electric one had good connections to companies and could get some money to start a company of his own, so he was basically a better manager, so his refrigerator won. And it shows that the technology is not, you know, an autonomous force that just comes and you can't resist it, but there are very many factors among which can be very different things that can influence it. And so there is this study on how technology is being developed and how then it becomes a black box, you know, something closed that you can't change anymore, but it happens only in the end of its production. And the idea of participatory design, where you kind of involve users of your product in the process of creation, it's also a very new concept in terms of how you perceive technology, that it's not created because there are certain logical rules or efficiency rules that dictate how to create something, but there are also, it's possible to introduce other practices inside it. And I think that, I mean, if you if we look at software as a part of this technological realm, then we can say that this idea that software is a cultural product, it is made by someone, and this someone created also some biases, aesthetic, social, political biases that are inside the software, and they influence the way we work with it and the final product. And so we should take care about it or do something about it. This idea also has to do with this new feeling about technology, that it's not neutral, it's not just bad, or it's different, and it's a cultural thing. And we should be careful about it. So these two approaches that people who look at on programming as an artistic practice, and who say that programming language is a language that you can create art with, and these people who look at software more as a kind of cultural entity that you can play around with, and they look at the outcomes of the software cultures that we all live in. Both these areas, they unite programmers and artists and other people who come into this field, but it can't be seen as a kind of field, you know, that has boundaries and that is very definite. So it's really difficult to, I would say that it's even disrupted. There are some groups or people there and here and there, and they don't really speak on the same terms. So basically, it's really difficult to bring them together. But also, it is very difficult to manipulate them or to kind of get possession of the field, you know, to appropriate it. So it's very interesting, I think, the situation that is there. And that's the kind of introduction into this idea of that with this kind of phenomenon, it's very important how you manage it and how you try to express interests of certain groups, or how you try to bring them together to develop something and not to kill it. And in the case of software art, we created this repository, which is an attempt to develop the field and to open it and not to close it and kill it. And so now I'm turning more to the history of the repository and how it actually works. So it's basically started with the festival. Software art festival we had in Moscow, and I curated it with Alexey Shulgin and Sergei Titerin. There were three people, curators, and it was held in May 2002. So I switched to English. And first, Sergei Titerin, he had an idea of making this online forum for submitting projects, because I mean, if you deal with software, it's very natural that it's an electronic format, it's all basically executable files or websites, so there is no, basically the idea of burning it on a CD and sending over in the snail mail is quite strange. So we thought we better go naturally and create a form, which is not there anymore, but it was there in the winners chapter. And we thought we create a form, so we make it more easier for people to submit projects. So first we thought, well, it's more it's natural, and then we thought that a lot of people who wouldn't really think, yeah, I'm an artist, they wouldn't care to send their work to the festival, you know, because it takes not so much, but some effort to print out the form, to fill it in, to burn the CD, to go to the post. If you're not really an artist and you don't want to present yourself as an artist, you won't do that. But if you find some site on the web that asks for some funny software, and you have some, you just maybe upload it, And so we hoped it would help us to get more interesting programs. And the second decision we took is that we made this online database, so all the projects that were entered, they were stored online, and everyone could check them and download them, and yeah, so you can look at them now. And we were thinking also that this idea, because the format of the festival is very much to a big extent it's discredited, because people have to send the products and project, artistic projects, and then they never know who else submitted what, and then there is this jury that somehow decides who is the best one, and then you never know if they chose their relative or if there were very nice projects that they didn't choose. Basically, it's very closed procedure, and you never know was it fair, or so people. Generally, audience is excluded from this process, and some people are not really in favor of this format. So we thought if all the projects are online and then we announce the winners, then we make it more democratic in a way that people can see if the jury members were actually correct or close to to it, and if they left out some projects, they could actually check them. And the third thing was that when we had a jury discussion, and on the jury members were Amy Alexander and Matthew Anum, Florian Kramer, Artmark Group, and Alexey Shulgin. And they were discussing, because we announced this first, second, and third prizes, which were not big money, but we still announced that there will be a first, second, and third prize. And when they were discussing this, they were thinking that, well, all the projects are so different and nobody actually knows what software art is because it's kind of new. So if we really give the first, second, and third prize, then we will say that the project that got the first prize is actually the best, and this is actually software art. And the project that got the second part is a little less software art. And so they thought it would be really unfair, and it won't actually... that at this particular moment in time, when you know software art is just such a new thing, it's very useful to present more projects and say, yeah, they're very different and they all have the right to be there and they're all very good. So they took all the money, divided it into three parts, equal parts, and gave three first prizes, basically. Two, three projects, Desk Swap and Screensaver that I've shown, and the extension that I actually also shown to you. So after this festival, we had some discussions with the guests of the festival, and then with the jury members, and we were, you know, taking this trip on a boat around Moscow River, and we're talking about software art. And software art was criticized by some people because the term itself was not coined by artists, but it was used first of all by curators and like people representing art institutions. And for people who are not really in favor of art institutions and who try to resist to institutions and power, it was kind of suspicious because they said, oh yeah, net art is now over, so they find a new art field, art trend, and they will use it to get new money or something, and then they will abandon it. So they looked at it more as a kind of a new thing to manipulate the power structures or money structures. And we thought, well, what can we do with it? Because there is I mean, there's definitely something's happening, but on the other hand, how can we work with it in the sense that we won't contribute to its kind of appropriation, but we would contribute to its opening and blossoming in a way. So we were having these utopian ideas, and we thought, well, we should have a festival with the categories, because you know there is a new art field. What do you think of all? What are the categories within the art field? How can you, you know, divide it and then rule no, say, okay, I divide it into two categories, and this one category is mine, don't touch it. It's so we thought we should divide it into categories because also categories show the way it can develop, because there are, yeah, it's very diverse, and you can show there is this category art code, and there is this category political software, and so people can think more about that. But then on the other hand, we thought we don't want to make it just a few things, so that we, of course, we are not, we don't know everything, nobody knows everything, so if we divide the field into just a few things, then a lot of things will be left out, and they will eventually disappear, because they're left out a few times and then they disappear. So we thought, well, we will introduce as many categories as we can. So we will try to include every possible practice. So if there are 30 categories, then first it's very difficult to appropriate them, because you can't make a festival with 30 categories, you know. But then on the other hand, it's good for developing. And then when we started the list with, to discuss the categories, there was this idea of a repository. And repository, software repository is quite a known format, because it's if you go to download.com or sweetcode.org, all these repositories with software, and they have this structure of categories and latest projects and this kind of things. So we thought it's nice to take this very common format and try to use it for art, and we wanted to see what would happen. So on the question of classification, we decided to make it in two ways. So on your left, you see the category list, which is quite long. And there are subcategories under each category. Or not each, but there are some. And on your right hand, you see the keyword cloud. So we thought that we will have two ways of classification. One is more rational, a category, and the one is more irrational. So people can suggest keywords and they can be whatever. So if you go to surreal, there is only one project. But if you go to visual, yeah, so you see there are more projects, and then you can see, oh, I want visual and dangerous. So there you get the, yeah. So that's the principle. And the basic idea also is that anyone can upload a project. But and the basic I will log to upload to download the project, you don't have to register, but to upload you have to register. And if you go to submit a project, then I will type just something to show you the procedure. You upload or link software, and then you choose a picture, and then you have the category. Yeah, so you can choose the category, and you can suggest your own subcategory, new subcategory. And this goes for administrators to approve. And and then when you get to the keywords, you can choose a list of keywords. So you see there are quite a lot of them now. And you can also suggest your own ones. And so we had the idea that the structure should be very flexible. And basically, everything can be suggested by the users. So they can suggest keywords, they can suggest subcategories, and they can suggest categories, but it's the category you should suggest in the mail, not in the form. So you can suggest. And then when actually doing the administration job, we were having, we had to come with, to kind of, to have kind of guidelines. And we thought that, you know, usually how it's done is that when something is already there, some art, like a piece of art history, let's say like that, there is a critic or kind of a theorist that comes and kind of creates a scheme and puts it on top of what is existing already. And then there can be another critic that creates a different structure or scheme, but then it's anyway putting on top of what's there, and it's always limiting what's existing there. And we thought we don't want to do it this way, we want to try to do it another way, that we kind of try to feel what's there and, you know, create a structure, probably, if it's possible, that doesn't exclude anything. So we, when we started it, we had a list of categories, but then we introduced new categories, and then when some projects arrive that we don't know where it belongs to, and we see that it's really different, then we introduce a new category. So we kind of try to be to respond to what we get. So we launched it in January 2003, and we had a second README festival in May 2003. So we had 4 months, and in 4 months we had more than 150 submissions, which is quite good. And now we have something like 250 in a year, and it's filtered, so we have administration, and we don't take all the projects, but also the we take almost everything. If something is really not fitting the idea, then we don't take it. Yeah, and when we had the second festival, we decided that, well, we should go further from this problem with the second, first, and third prize, and we thought we won't have prizes at all. So we don't want to play around with this idea of capitalist Western idea of someone being first and the winner, and others being the losers, and this kind of ideology. And also we don't want to involve money in this. But we thought, well, we will suggest the symbolic capital. And the symbolic capital would be the capital of contextualization and capital of attention to your work and recognition. So we decided that the featuring part will be actually the prize. So the projects which were best in the opinion of our jury were featured on the website, and we also published the book with the featured projects and the features. And what's amazing also that, of course, because we had so many entries, and we also have a special policy that not only, because, you know, in the field of software art, as I was trying to explain, there are lots of projects that are made and they're just staying there in the internet, and people have abandoned the sites, or just they're just, you know, programmers, and they don't care about this little joke that they made there. But if you find it, you can find if you happen to find it, you find an excellent project. So we thought we will give the right to people to submit projects, found objects, you know, to continue this tradition of found objects. And so the expert group and also the people who were involved in creating RunMe.org, and I should say that I'm not the one who did it, but there is a whole group of people which is very big, and you can see the names here. And so these people were, you know, going through the internet and finding things and uploading them. So we had a very high percentage of good projects. So when we had actually the jurying procedure or something that can be called that way, we had 47 projects featured. So I think it's, I personally really like this idea that we have 47 winners. Where else can you have such a thing? Yeah, so I don't know, probably I want to finish here because I also think that it's nice to answer some questions or have some little discussion because I don't know what you want to know. So thank you. You can submit the software itself in zipped or stuff it on any other kind of archivator or how we call it. But you can also submit a link because there are things that are not, like project can be not necessarily a piece of software, it can be something else, you know. And also if you're not sure whether the person would like that you submit his software, her software without knowing, then you can also submit a link, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know, maybe you want to know something about how to we manage the archive, or how it's, because it's the archive evening. Sorry?
The discussion going on, everybody agreeing or so that there's no money being involved in this
movement? No, there are money, there is money being involved, of course. The idea is that we kind of try to maintain this double-headed structure, that we have the festival and we have the repository, which in times of the festival serves as a submission form and a database for the festival. So when we get money for the festival, we can pay some part to the programmer or to people who actually write reviews, because I mean it's a lot of work. So and also the administrators or like people who work daily get some money from the festival, you know, because they also make the festival. So we have some money for the project, but we don't get them it officially for the project. And the structure allows you to remain quite flexible, you know, because you can also put forward either the festival or the archive and kind of play around with it.
The ones who submit,
they don't make money, yeah. No, it's only in English.
Maybe you can show some more examples, because at one point you said we have an exhibition that we don't accept anything, but we accept mostly everything, so there are some principles?
Yeah, it's very difficult to say which principles, because they're not formalized, and we more rely on our intuition. Which is, in a way, to say that yeah, it's a bit authoritarian because there is a number of people who are who are responsible for administration. But I also think that with a database like that, you can't be absolutely open, because then it will be just hacked and flooded with whatever projects, and then there will be no use in it. So I'm, in a way, in this sense, advocate of some kind of control. And the projects that we don't accept are because sometimes we are getting advertisements, you know, like, or we don't, mostly we don't accept flash projects, because people make these animations and they send it. I mean, we don't, just don't. And yeah, we have this frequently asked questions section, and it says that most, for instance, flash projects are not suitable for Runme.org. Yeah. So that's the basic. Yeah, but it's more for the categories. But also we, I mean, we also try to, because you know it's such a new thing that nobody actually has an idea of what it is, or like nobody can claim that, well, I know what it is and this is not that. So we try to actually take as much as we can so that people will then define themselves what is interesting. What to show? Well, I want to show this, I don't know, we'll go search, but it's really an amazing project that we found on the net. And I can't show it because it's very difficult to make, but I can explain it. And you can probably exhibit it, you know. So it's called Tempest for Elisa. And it's a piece of software, but it's also a manipulation of hardware. So the idea of the project is, I don't know if it's the website is there. Yeah. The idea is that the computer monitor transmits radio signal. And the radio signal changes depending on what's on the monitor, what's shown on the monitor. So this guy wrote a program based on Linux that shows visuals on the monitor that, when transmitted on the radio waves, they play, you can get a melody. So if you put a radio receiver close enough to the monitor, you get the melody if you play, you know. And what you play, it's this amazingly nice stripes, you know, on the monitor, white and black and different colors. And we exhibited for the Rytmi Festival in Helsinki this year. It really works. I mean, you just tune the radio and you get, you know, for Elisa, you know, from these stripes. So I think, I mean, this is the high quality media art projects, that project that is just found on the net. Yeah, I'm a fan of it, so I'm very excited. But also you have, of course, this game deconstructions, which is an old special tradition of itself, in itself. And then you have artistic tools, which are more for, like, well, we wouldn't consider Photoshop into this category, but there are kind of custom tools made by people to play around with visuals and sounds and different things. And then under the digital aesthetics research and development, we have projects playing with dysfunctionality and the aesthetics of glitch. And there is the guy who collects different glitches and errors. And there is a generative art kind of piece which we included, but I don't know, there is an argument going on between software art and generative art. So, yeah. And then, yeah, political and activist software.
It requires a lot of action from people in the pieces to make them run.
We have a report form that you can report a broken link or something. Yeah, we have, but usually we have reports that some link is broken or something is missing, but people usually don't have problems running the software. You know, that's the thing. And yeah. Yeah, I don't remember the address of statistics, but the amount of people is very big. And then we were featured on Slashdot, and then the site just went down because we had like, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of visitors, and it was a big thing, you know, that we got into this programmer's community. Yes! Something like that. But yeah, so in some months we had quite a lot of visitors, and I think it's an open database that can be used by art institutions as well, and just people who want to find nice things or just, you know, interested people. And sometimes we get, there are a lot of reactions. Also, you know, some weblogs or some kind of, in a way, mirror sites that traces what's new, you know, and reports it about it in their communities. Or they are, you know, I've like journals who just take all the, you know, and review all the projects, you know, because so they don't have to find it themselves, but they can just take it from there. So, and yeah, we're also getting some projects that are the reaction of on the projects that are already there. So it's kind of, it has its own life. Demo, yeah, that's the big thing. Normally, yeah, we decided not to do to deal with it. The reason, first we thought that it's such a huge field and they have their own community and very developed art like sites, and there are thousands of them, you know, we can't, so basically we thought there is no need in, you know, and also, so first we thought there is no need in our participation, but then we also, I think, you know, this is a very old practice, and when it started, it was for me very interesting, you know, but now I think what I see, it's not so interesting, because first there are very few demo communities that are actually still use these rules that you have to make it as small as possible, because people just do these megabytes of, you know, the very commercial oriented, very kind of pop style images. And you see this 3D women, you know, and I mean, it's like a youth culture, but it doesn't have any critical force behind it in a way, and it also became very much used by the commercial sector, because there is this, for instance, in Finland there is this assembly, this kind of big meeting of demo people in like really huge arena, sports arena. And they have sponsors such as Nokia and Mac, Apple, and I mean very big companies. And they have prizes like 50,000 euro, you know, the first prize. I think they don't need our support. I mean, they're fine. Demo. Of course, yeah, yeah. I don't aim at, you know, presenting this what I was saying about as any history, because of course, I mean, I even don't have the expertise to say, you know, what was done in 60s and 70s by those people that on those machines that I don't know and I never have access to. But of course, it's all there, you know, it's all the history in a way. But yeah, I just. We sometimes we find and include these old things, you know, old kind of, but the oldest we have also maybe for those, you know, some kind of little viruses or some little funny things, but not, yeah, for Atari or yes. Thank you.
Yeah,
that's good.